Daniel Jones, we welcome you to Word of Mouth. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
9 years into editing this column, are you an expert on love?
I'm more educated than I was before, or at least that's my wife's hope, I think.
But you're not yet a love Mensa?
You know, it's a little hard to make that claim. This is a subject that's been written about and studied so much. I feel like I'm more, as I say in the beginning of the book, I don't feel like I've been mastering love all these years as much as marinating in it. And feel more like a pickle in a jar than a guru on a mountaintop.
You write about all different aspects of love. One, just to narrow it down, we can focus on technology. And if you had to guess, which percentage of submissions to the Modern Love column have to do with technology in some way, whether it would be online dating or online relationships or how we communicate with devices, any of those things?
Yeah, I mean, probably as a focus, I'd say a third of them, you know, involve technology. But in terms of having technology and communications devices and those sorts of things as parts of the story, I mean, it's got to be 80 or 90%.
Online dating was pretty well established when Modern Love, the column, was created in 2004. I'm wondering if we think even in the past 10 years, online dating has changed the nature of relationships.
Well, from what I can tell, it has. It changes our mindset going into relationships because some people are very clear-headed about who they think they would be compatible with. I'm not sure if that turns out to be right for them, but they at least go in with that feeling, and they would have before online dating. But online dating forces anyone who participates in it to try to figure out in advance, according to sort of parameters and income and height and all those sorts of common and uncommon questions the sites ask you to figure out in advance. And often we just rule out whole groups of people based on who we think is most like us or who isn't.
So you and your wife tried a kind of experiment. You both signed up on a dating site to see if it would identify you as potential matches for each other. So what happened?
We actually signed up on two online dating sites. And to say why we were in midlife and looking, my wife said that I had died and her husband had died. And I had said that I was divorced. And otherwise, we answered all the questions truthfully. And we waited for our own profile to roll in and be reintroduced because we're really incredibly compatible in so many ways and have so much in common. And we were even born 10 days apart and 10 miles apart in the same state. Neither site, no matter how long we were on them, no matter how many profiles were delivered to us with these smiling faces, it was never either of us. So apparently we shouldn't be together.
Well, you know, you say you tell the truth. She actually lied a little.
Well, we only lied about that. One thing that made us, it turned out, incompatible is, and this has been a longstanding gripe, is that she had put her preferred income level for her husband to be higher than I'd confessed to in my profile. So I guess based on that basis alone, you know, I'd been ruled out early.
You give an example of this woman named Sophia who never would have met her partner had she chosen it online. Can you tell us a little bit about their story?
Yes, I can. And their story, which I'll mention in a moment, is so common where you don't know who you're going to love. In her case, she was a Berkeley war protesting hippie of sort of the highest level, criticizing corporate America and the military and all of that. Anyway, she had a mutual friend who thought that she might like, you know, this friend of his and that they should go out. And unbeknownst to her, he was a ROTC soldier cop who liked to collect guns and read ammo magazine and all of that and was as conservative can be. And she liked him. And she liked the way he treated her. And she fought against this relationship for months and I think even years before she finally broke down and thought, well, I love him and he loves me. And, you know, they're still together all these years later. She would have ruled him out 20 different ways before meeting him if she'd seen him in a profile.
I guess it's one of those opposite attracts examples. And there are so many plays on the relationship cliches that you find a lot of humor in, and I guess compassion. That's what I saw, even the newer, more technologically up-to-date cliches. But you're never judgmental. And I wonder if that's a discipline for you not to be judgmental about what people write about, or does it come naturally?
I've been completely beaten down over the years by having read so many stories that I think all of my or a lot of my prejudices and judgmental attitudes have been beaten out of me. I think the power of storytelling, and one reason why the column has such an enduring popularity and readership, is I think we learn through stories, and we learn to live our lives through stories and by hearing people reveal their struggles in such an honest way. I feel like, you know, love is love, and however you found it and however you maintain it, you know, good for you.
Well, it is really easy to start a relationship online, and you have a segment there called Soulmate in a Box about people who connect exclusively through emails and texts and Skype. Some have never, ever met. Have you come to understand the appeal of that kind of a relationship?
Oh, I completely understand the appeal of it. And it's the appeal of starting a relationship without having to feel vulnerable. And that's always what the big stumbling block is. We don't want to feel vulnerable, and we don't want to feel like we can be rejected. And stumbling into an online relationship with someone has a real insulating quality. You don't feel like it can be possible because they're far away, and it's impractical to get together. And this allows the people to, you know, because they're only communicating by talking, they completely let down their guard. They completely open up their heart, and they get really deep really fast. And suddenly this person has become the most important person in their lives. But it's not a full relationship. You can have emotional and intellectual chemistry, and then you can have physical chemistry, and you can try to separate those two. But if you want to have a real full relationship, they all have to be together.
There's a story that you retell about Caitlin. She's a college student with that idea that she's perfectly in control until something sort of tips over. What happens with her?
Yeah, she had met this guy who lives 900 miles away or something. They were both in college, and they'd met at some conference just briefly in a bar and then connected via Twitter later. And their connection snowballed into one of these what I call soulmate-in-a-box relationships, where you can get all your emotional sustenance through Skype and by confessing everything to them because you don't think it's ever really going to turn real. But then it becomes so strong that you have to take that chance of meeting in person and making it real. So she travels finally. She rents a car and travels 9 hours or however long it takes her to go see him. And in person, it's not the same thing, in part because they're uncomfortable physically in person, in part because he was used to getting his emotional fix online. And so when they were together in the same room, he was still lured toward his iPhone and lured toward his laptop because that's where it had come from before, and it's just a hard habit to break.
That, I guess, is a common theme in many of these stories that you retell in your book, Love Illuminated. The idea that even if you find somebody, there are just no guarantees. Or as you write, you have no answers to provide. It's the questions that count. What do you mean by that?
I don't think in relationships, telling someone what to do is all that helpful. I think you can tell them what other people do and what has happened and what patterns people fall into, and then they can figure their way out of it. There's nothing more impossible than trying to convince somebody not to love somebody that you think is wrong for them. I feel like the most useful advice, or non-advice, for people in relationships is to give them examples of what other people have done and hope that helps.
Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column of the New York Times. His new book is called Love Illuminated, exploring life's most mystifying subject with the help of 50,000 strangers. Thank you so much for sharing some stories today.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
You can find much more on Daniel's book. There's a link at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. Up next, what modern love sounds like. The days of strings and swells have been replaced by synth pop and auto-tune. We'll also reveal the results of our listener poll. Which will win out? Songs about love or heartache? You're going to have to stay tuned to find out.
So deep in your eyes, I touch on you more and more every time. When you leave, I'm begging you.